You've probably seen the best-selling volume, Life's Little Instruction Book, 15 months, number one on the New York Times bestseller list. Well, maybe you don't know the background, so let me read to you from the introduction of this book by H. Jackson Brown, Jr. He writes that this book began as a gift to my son, Adam. As he packed his stereo, typewriter, blue blazer, and other necessities for his new life as a college freshman, I retreated to the family room to jot down a few observations and words of counsel that I thought that he might find helpful. I had read years ago that it was not the responsibility of parents to pave the road for their children, but to provide a roadmap. That's how I hoped he would use these mind and heart reflections. I started writing. What I thought would take a few hours took several days. I gathered my collection of handwritten notes, typed them up, and put them in a dime store binder. I walked to the garage and slid it under the front seat of the station wagon. A few days later, his mother and I helped him move into his new dorm room. And when he was all settled in, I asked him to come with me to the parking lot. It was time for the presentation. I reached under the car seat, and with words to the effect that this was what I knew about living a happy and a rewarding life, handed him the bound pages. He hugged me and shook my hand. It was a very special moment. A few days after I had given Adam his copy, he called me from his dorm room. "Dad," he said, "I've been reading the instruction book, and I think it is one of the best gifts I've ever received. I'm going to add to it and someday give it to my son." Brown adds, "Every once in a while, life hands you a moment so precious, so overwhelming, you almost glow. I know. I had just experienced one of those moments." Now, it's not a difficult book to read. In fact, some of the print is so big that you can read it from the back of the balcony right now, and it has one, two, or three lines per page. I could read the entire book to you with all 511 instructions, but let me give you just a sampling of 10 of them. Number one in his list is, compliment three people every day. Number two, not quite in the same league, is have a dog. Number three, watch a sunrise at least once every year. Number five, overtip waitresses at breakfast. Number 249, hire people smarter than you. Number 261, take family vacations whether you can afford them or not. The memories will be priceless. Number 263, don't discuss salaries. 267, lie on your back and look at the stars. Number 270, arrive at work early and stay beyond quitting time. Number 367, acquire things the old-fashioned way. Save for them and pay cash. Well, that's just some of the 500 items in Life's Little Instruction Book. But when you read the biography of Jesus in Luke chapter 10, you see some similarity, not so much in the content, but that it is a collection of sayings, statements, instructions, bits of wisdom that come from Jesus Christ, not necessarily connected, not with some apparent theme through them, but all of them good. So listen up. Number one in Jesus' list of 10 is to go together. The Lord appointed 72 others and sent them two by two ahead of him to every town and place where he was about to go. He told them, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Go, I'm sending you like lambs among wolves." Jesus wanted his followers to represent him wherever we went, and he wanted his followers to recruit others to become Christians. Jesus knew that that would be great. He knew that the results would be fantastic, but he also knew that it would be tough along the way. And so his instruction was for Christians to team up with others. Don't go alone. Find a partner. That everywhere we look, that we seek to recruit other people to become Christians, we should not be loners in the process. So at work, find another Christian and pray together once a week. In the neighborhood, check out and find out who the other Christians are and become their friends. At school, discover who is another follower of Jesus Christ and hang out with that person. Wherever you go, find other Christians to team together, and if you can't find anyone else, then pray that God will provide someone else. Instruction number one, go together. Jesus' instruction number two, don't get cluttered with possessions. Or as he put it, do not take a purse or bag or sandals. Jesus was warning against the gathering of too much stuff in life. Maybe you read in the current issue of Money Magazine the article about people who have won their state lotteries and thereby gotten unexpected millions of dollars. You could not help but be impressed by the quotes from those who said that they were sorry they won, that they wished that they could go back to when they had less, when life was simpler, even though it may have been more of a struggle. Now, don't misunderstand what Jesus is here saying. He is not forbidding people to wear shoes or to have purses or to say that we should not have any possessions, but he is saying, lighten up. Don't focus all of life upon the things that we have and thereby define who we are. Don't get cluttered with possessions. Jesus' instruction number three, stay focused. He said, when you go out, do not greet anyone on the road. What Jesus was doing here is warning against becoming distracted from what is really important in life. I think if he were saying it today, he would perhaps use a sports analogy, and he would say, keep your eye on the ball. Not that the people in the stands aren't important, not that you are unaware of the other members of your team or the opposing team, but if everything is equally important, then you're going to miss the ball. Then you're going to miss what you are there to do. So stay focused. Stay focused so that in life, being a Christian is the most important thing of all. And don't allow other things to become equal in importance. Don't get distracted. Stay focused. Jesus' instruction number four, bless others. He says, when you enter a house, first say, peace to this house. If a man of peace is there, your peace will rest on him. If not, it will return to him. I really like this one. Because it's saying, when you get into someone's car, or when you visit someone's house, or you're at someone's apartment, or you go into someone's office, to bless them. Don't criticize them. Don't put them down. Be a representative of God. Wish them well. Give them the grace of God. Don't discourage them, but bless them in Jesus' name. And if the people don't want the blessing, do it anyway. And think of their rejection as a way of having that blessing bounce back to you. It's like a greeting card that you send and you get it back, or an email message that you put out on the internet and its return is undelivered. And while you're saddened to get it back, think of it as a blessing that comes back that was unexpected. It bounced off the wall and it came to you. Bless others. Number five in Jesus' list is be content with what you get. He says, stay in that house, eating and drinking whatever they give you. For the worker deserves his wages. Do not move around from house to house. When you enter a town and are welcomed, eat what is set before you. Understand, of course, that Jesus is talking about sending out these 72 followers of his into all of these different villages. And when they go into those villages, they become the guests of people who are interested in his gospel. He's saying, if you're in someone's home and you look across the street and there's a better house, stay put where you are. If they offer you a meal, but you think that you can get a better dinner down the block, don't go just because you can get something better. Be content with what you get. It was, I think now about 10 years ago, that along with several others, I was traveling in the Sahel, which is the area south of the Sahara Desert, on behalf of the World Relief Corporation. And we went to this totally remote village in Burkina Faso. And it was a village where they had no well, at least previously had no well. And so the women of the village would have to each day take a large clay jar or pot. They would put it on their heads and they would walk. It was 3 to 5 miles to the closest source of water, fill it up, and then can you imagine walking back that distance with this amazing amount of weight perched upon each of these women's heads. World Relief went into this village and provided a well in the community. So all of them were within a few hundred feet of a well where they could access water. We were coming to celebrate that well, and they wanted to express their gratitude to God and their gratitude to us. So when we arrived, they put on a feast, and it was ready and waiting, actually, at the time that we showed up, and it was outside over an open fire with a large cauldron. You know these cartoons about missionaries in this black pot? Well, that's what went through my mind when I saw this. I was concerned about who or what they were going to cook, and then found out what the plan was, and that is that they had put the food to cook in this large cauldron, and we were the honored guests, and I think perhaps going in alphabetical order, I was first. And the plan was that I was given a large fork, almost like a grappling fork, and you put it into the cauldron until you hook some meat or something solid, and then you pull it up. So I did. First of all, I had no idea what kind of animal this was, and even worse yet, I had no idea what part of that animal it was that I had hooked. So as best I could, I let it slip off the fork back into the cauldron, and tried again and got some other part that I didn't recognize what it was and pulled it out, and the combination of the sight and the smell made it totally unappetizing, except I was told that those people at best ate meat once a year, that they had significantly sacrificed in order to provide this meal, that this was a major, major event in their lives and within their community. So, I ate what was served. Understand what Jesus is here saying. He's saying, be content, be glad for what you have. Don't always be looking for something better, a better deal. Don't be a complainer, don't be finicky. Be grateful for food, be grateful for clothes, be grateful for friends, be grateful for the things that God has provided for us. Be content with what you get. Jesus' instruction number 6 is to give priority to those who are responsive. It's in Luke 10, verses 9 to 17, that Jesus talked about those times when his followers would go into a town preaching the message of Jesus, healing people, and they would face opposition and rejection. Jesus referred to those situations saying, when you enter a town and are not welcomed, when that happens, he says, move on. Go to the people who are interested. Teach the people who want to be taught. Help the people who want to be helped. Heal the people who want to be healed. Represent Jesus Christ. And when they reject you, understand they're not rejecting you. They're rejecting Jesus, and those who reject Jesus are really rejecting God. It is quite a simple principle. It is that the deployment of resources should go to where there will be a responsiveness. Is that then saying that we should not pray for those whom we love and have been unresponsive to the gospel of Jesus Christ for a decade or for a lifetime? Or that if people seem to be resistant to the good that we would wish and bless upon them, that we should walk away and forget about them? Of course not. Of course not. But it is to acknowledge that until a crisis comes in their lives, until they have a change of attitude, until something is different, probably they will not respond, and that in the meantime, we cannot neglect those who are responsive. And so Jesus is coming right out and saying it. Go with those who are responsive. Teach those who will learn. Bless those who want a blessing. Heal those who want to be healed. Give priority to the responsive. Jesus' instruction number 7 is to stay humble. He said, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. I have given you authority to trample on snakes and scorpions and to overcome all the powers of the enemy. Nothing will harm you. However, do not rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven. Jesus was here probably referring to something that happened long before our cosmic history. Way back before time was counted. Apparently, Satan, or as he is also known in the Bible, Lucifer, was the grandest of God's creatures in heaven, the top angel. Most powerful, most intelligent, most beautiful, most magnificent. But he became proud. Decided that he would be a competitor against God. And so God kicked him out of heaven, and he fell like a lightning bolt downward out of heaven. And became the advocate for evil, the adversary against God and against all that is good. And Jesus warns us as Christians to be careful that that does not happen to us. That we do not take the blessings that God has given to us and somehow allow that to become a trigger mechanism for pride. Specifically with these disciples, he said, I've given to you the authority to trample on snakes and scorpions and to overcome all the power of the enemy, and nothing will harm you. And he's saying, you know, a person could become proud over that. You could begin to think that these sources of blessing are something that you have generated.
I want you to hear what the prophets are saying.
Well, the case may be different. The situation has not changed. It may be today that we have gifts from God of good looks or of money or a nice family or a fine job or a lovely home or an expensive car or an excellent education or a powerful position or any of the things that are from God's gracious hand that can become the source of pride. We say, well, look at me. Look at what I've got. Jesus says, don't do that, because that is the kind of pride that can come before a fall. Instead, rejoice that your names are written in heaven. If you want to be excited about something, be excited not about the good things that you have here on earth, but be grateful that you are enrolled in heaven forever. That is something to really get excited about. All very good advice. Don't be proud. Stay humble. And instruction number 8 is to stay simple. Jesus, full of joy through the Holy Spirit, said, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and the learned and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for this was your good pleasure. This is a very Jesus-type statement. Just typical of the type thing that he insists upon. Insisting that people who position themselves as the smartest and the best, as those who are most clever and best educated and sophisticated, may not understand God's greatest spiritual truth. That we can, well, I think if we were saying it today, we might say, don't be too smart for your own good. That we can think that we have everything figured out, only to miss the greatest and most important of the basics of life. And we see this in other areas besides the spiritual area of life. We read articles in the paper about people who are convinced that they have a plan and a formula that will always beat the stock market, only to discover that a whole year goes by when the return on their money is half of what they would have gotten if they had tracked with the S&P 500. Or someone else who has this elaborate plan in order to come up with some medical solution, only to discover the person would have been better off simply taking an aspirin. Or people who come up with some elaborate scheme for child rearing to the point that they ignore what the Bible has to say about how a family should be shaped and directed. Or the person that gets graduate degrees in philosophy but becomes so self-smart that the truths of God and the Bible cannot be understood. Jesus is saying, children aren't usually like that. Children have faith that is simple. They have an approach that is uncomplicated. Children have a trust in God that is somehow intuitive. It's deep and it's powerful. Now, please don't misunderstand. Jesus is not here arguing some anti-intellectualism. He is not pleading for ignorance. He doesn't want us to put our Christian minds in neutral, hardly at all. But he does warn us against getting so smart that we miss the basics of God's spiritual truths. So instruction number 8 is to stay simple. Number 9 is to keep your eyes on Jesus. He says, "All things have been committed to me by my Father. No one knows who the Son is except the Father, and no one knows who the Father is except the Son and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him." Here Jesus is teaching something elsewhere taught, but profoundly important. He's saying, no one knows God the Father like Jesus does. And no one knows Jesus like God the Father does. And the only way to know God is through Jesus, because God reveals himself through Jesus and has committed to Jesus all power, all authority, so that Jesus is the greatest of all. Jesus is everything. Now, to parallel that in a more ordinary experience in terms, we might say, well, think of somebody really important. I mean, who would turn your head in a crowd? A king or a president? The head of government or the head of state or the chief of staff? Or a celebrity or an exceptionally famous or wealthy or powerful individual? Who would turn your head so that you would ignore other people and focus on that person? And the teaching here is, that's the kind of focus that should be on Jesus. Keep your eyes on him as the most important person of all, more important than anyone else, more significant, a greater celebrity, wealthier, more powerful, head of the list, whatever category you want to put him in, that Jesus is the best and the greatest of all. And to live life that way, to keep your eyes on Jesus. Well, Jesus has 10 instructions, and the 10th in this 10-part list is to be happy with your blessings. He puts it this way. But then he turned to his disciples and said privately, "Blessed are the eyes that see what you see. For I tell you that many prophets and kings wanted to see what you see, but did not see it, and to hear what you hear, but did not hear it." It's something we all need to know. It's a reminder that we all need to appreciate what we have. Jesus is saying that if you go back through history, there are monarchs who really wanted to see what they never saw, but Jesus showed it to his friends. They wanted to hear teachings that came directly from God, but they could never get it with all of their religion. But from Jesus, it's available. To appreciate, disciples, that you have things everybody else would have dreamed and yearned for. So don't take for granted what you have from Jesus Christ. Last Wednesday, the newspaper USA Today had a special section on aging in America. And it had with it a timeline that listed life expectancy in different eras over the last several thousand years. And it may or may not be of interest that 2,000 years ago, life expectancy in the Roman Empire was about 22 years. But it may be much more interesting to know that at the beginning of this century in this country, life expectancy was half of what it is today. That is to say that we today in 1999 live twice as long as the typical person did 99 years ago. I think we take that for granted. I think that we say, well, I wish I could live a lot longer, or I wish that every ailment that I have could be cured. I wish that life could be easier and better, not to discount problems or pain or diseases or any of the horrors with which we cope. They are real, and they should not and cannot be minimized. But it is the principle here that we be happy with blessings that we have, for we have things that 100 years ago in this country, people would have never dreamed. They could not have imagined that they could live as long and as well as we do. And Jesus says that the same principle applies to spiritual truth, that we have a direct relationship with God through Jesus Christ. Don't take that for granted. That we have assurance of the forgiveness of sin and eternal life in heaven. Don't take that for granted. That we have God close by our side at all times and in all circumstances. That what we have is more than most people in most of history in most places dreamed or imagined that they could ever spiritually have. And so Jesus says, appreciate what you've got. Be happy with your blessings. 10 instructions from Jesus Christ. And at the end of a 10-part list, we can't even remember all the items on the list. So pick one. Pick one and say, hey, that's for me. Learn it. Remember it. Live it out this week. Which one do you pick? Here's the list. Go together. Number 2, don't get cluttered with possessions. Number 3, stay focused. Number 4, bless others. Number 5, be content with what you get. Number 6, give priority to the responsive. Number 7, stay humble. Number 8, stay simple. Number 9, keep your eyes on Jesus. Number 10, be happy with your blessing.